So now we come to the question of questions. Is God real? Sounds strange. What have we been speaking about? But if we really go into the metaphysics of Brahman and Sankhya. Sankhya is a declared Nastic. It's not a Nastic. It's regarded as one of the Nastic streams. Because there is no really God. There is a Purusha whose light falls upon nature. That's it. He is a Sakshi. He is not Ishvara in that sense. He just, something of his light falls, which he withdraws. Similarly, now Brahman, so that need for worship, devotion, has been granted more as a concession to human nature. If you really read into the literature, so there is all this paraphernalia, worship, all the gods, and all of them, each of them embodies a quality, and the term is Sagun Brahman, but basically it's at the end of it. You have to cross that into the impersonal, formless reality. So it's not really, and there is a very beautiful story of Sri Ramakrishna with that in this regard. So when he wanted to, you know, practice that Advaita Vedanta in the highest sense, so his guru tells him that you are speaking to Kali, and if you want the ultimate truth, you have to take the sword and remove her form. You have to enter into the formless. So he says, this is difficult. I can't do this. He says, but you know, the highest knowledge will remain inaccessible. And so he has to do it. That's how it is described. If you read that conversation, it's almost shocks that, you know, how could someone do it? So all these things, the gods and goddesses are still an imposition of Maya on the Nirgun. The ultimate reality is formless, qualityless, featureless, ineffable. So this leaves a big hiatus in understanding that what I call as myself, my personality, the person, does it have a reality at all? So Sankhya answers it that yes, there are the multiple Purushas as we read yesterday. But who are these multiple Purushas? These multiple Purushas are basically the one light which is getting reflected in nature. Nature is always turbulent. See, when the moonlight reflects in the ocean, so ocean is creating ripples and waves. So you may see there are different points of light. And then the principle of Ahankar, which is part of nature, goes around it, and each point of light as if it is separate. That's how we feel it is. So that's how the idea of multiple Purusha is explained. Now you see, this has deep ramifications. And why I keep on saying that, you know, we should get back to the yoga of the Gita. Sri Aurobindo takes it from there and takes it further. So because we have been saying that there is an ultimate reality which is Nirguna Brahma, those who read the literature, and all the gods and goddesses are ultimately, they are a concession given to human nature. See, there was a gap. And this gap was filled by the Semitic religions. Christianity has the conception of God. It doesn't go into Sagun Nirgun. There is God. He governs the world. You can connect with him. He answers your prayers. We have gods who answer each god and attribute. And there is a Sagun Brahm which borders onto impersonality. So this has, that's why you will see that the moment you go into, it has very interesting historic ramification, that if you go into the Western world, they accept Buddhism. Because in Buddhism, there is no concept of God. There is an Atma. There is no, he has done away even with self. So it appeals. Why? Because it doesn't challenge the idea of God. So it's acceptable that, okay, you can practice all this, but ultimately we have a God who is great, who governs the world. Now, this appeals to an aspect of human nature. I'm not going into it in detail. That's why Advaita Vedanta also gets its roots. So is God just an impersonal, universal state of consciousness? That's how we will see many modern interpreters of Vedanta speak about. God is an what we call as God is our ignorant human mind. There is an impersonal universal state. Well, we may say that something of that state is there in each. It is immanent as Sharobhav, and this is the Akshara. But Sri Krishna, for the first time, speaks of not two but three Purushas. And that is something marvelous, one of the greatest gifts, that beyond the Shara, the ever mutable Brahman is even in the Shara, that is the mutable world, as immanent, he is immanent in creation as the essence. This was known. Beyond the Shara is Akshara. But beyond the Shara and the Akshara, and holding them both within himself, is the Purushottama. So, the Upanishads speak of two Purusha, Shara and the Akshara. But Sri Krishna brings the first time the Purushottama so powerfully. So there is the being of God. And actually, if we look at it logically also, we will reach the same conclusion. Before reading the Gita, this used to be my idea that, well, if there is a consciousness or existence which is conscious of itself, then by definition, it is a being, because whatever Brahman is aware of himself, nobody has to tell him that, look here, you are Brahman. Brahman knows itself by itself. By itself means its own consciousness. So, it is a being, self-aware, occult, impenetrable, but then it still leaves a problem that fine, he is aware of itself, but is there something corresponding to him within us? Can we relate with him? Does he really answer, or that task is given only to the gods, which are creations of Maya, and you have to just come out of that? It's a question which has been left unanswered. And it is thanks to Sri Aurobindo who brings out this in very bold relief. He absolutely, what the Gita says, he says beyond the Purusha of Sankhya. See, if you go into the Purusha, basically it's just pure intelligence. So we'll hear these terms also. That who is divine, they use the word divine, but it's pure intelligence. So you can't relate with a pure intelligence. Even to relate with an intelligent person is problematic enough. Pure intelligence, cosmic intelligence. Okay, fine. What about our personality? You go and tell pure intelligence, you know, I'm having feelings of love for you, evil. No response. It's intelligence. All this is Maya. This has been a big problem and big hiatus. So Sri Aurobindo says that, well, Purusha and Prakriti is real. Brahman and Maya are real. But there is a still greater truth in which both of them are reconciled, joined, united. And that is the truth of Ishvara and Shakti. So the transcendent is the Ishvara. Now, what is the difference between Ishvara and just Brahman, who is immanent in the creation? Ishvara is not just seated in the transcendence. This is Sri Aurobindo, and is based on his own experience, because these are truths we can, of course, logically argue. But let's go straight to how Sri Aurobindo says. So he says, not only there, he governs the world and all its processes. So one may ask, but where is the evidence in the scriptures? He says in Sankhya also you have, he is the one who sanctions. So who will sanction? At some level, one who is sanctioning by its nature is the Lord, Adhyaksha. These are words used that he sanctions. So he cannot sanction unless he has the power and the authority to sanction. So there is an authority, and then the rest is following as per the sanction. So it This idea of the Ishvara and Shakti comes out in bold relief. What is the difference between Ishvara, Shakti and Brahman and Maya? Brahman is impersonal, universal. So it doesn't give a clue to our own personality. We have a personality, whether it be good or bad, or we like it or we don't like it. We have the sense of a personality. By personality is meant not just that I exist, but I have these aspects within me, like a miniature something, a whole being with which we identify ourselves. So this personality finds its truth in the Ishvara and the Shakti. All the different relations that we long to have with God or with the being above, that is found in the truth of the Ishvara and the Shakti. This is the Gita speaks of it. It develops it to an extent. That's what we see in the great vision in chapter 11, that when Sri Krishna reveals himself as the Vishwa Virat Purush. But there he hints at the Purusha entering into the being entering into the transcendent. He hints at it. But it's mainly a Vishwarup. So as cosmic being he appears. But all around we can see that there is something which escapes, enters into something which is beyond, vast. So that which it escapes into, what is there? What is there? So Sri Aurobindo confirms that yes, there is the truth of the Ishvara and Shakti. And here the truth is no more of sanction and doing. Here they are one. So whatever the Ishvara knows, the Shakti automatically translates into real time. She manifests, she knows. There is nothing like a sanction. They are one reality. Knowledge and will in this world where we live, they are never together. It's a known thing for anyone. If we look closely, either when we know something, will doesn't automatically follow it. There have been very interesting neurological experiments also in it. Largely, it is the will that does things and the knowledge follows later. So we are mostly in that state that we do. And then we look back and we say, okay, that's why probably I did. It requires a great sincerity even to know, because we are completely governed by the will. And one of the tantric processes which Sri Aurobindo himself speaks about in his Tantra Siddhi Prakaranam, which is a Sanskrit literature, I don't think it is published. And he also speaks about in his automatic writings with Raja Ram Mohan Roy, starts with will. That straight away, that she is the will, and you surrender everything to the will and let her do with you, through you, whatever she wants. Now, of course, we know that it can be very, not anybody can practice it, and it has its big challenges. Sri Aurobindo speaks of first knowledge, the Vedanta, then the Tantra aspect. But anyways, just coming back to this idea of the divine as being, so there is in him existence, consciousness, force, bliss, all together. They are not separated. So whatever is there as a possibility in the existence, consciousness automatically takes it. And she transmits. Where does she transmit? To Maya. Now Maya is of two types. The Vidyamay Maya receives it in the correct format. She transmits to Avidyamay Maya. Avidyamay Maya makes a more rigid caste, because that is the original will to multiplicity. And then the Avidyamay Maya transmits it to nature, and nature creates all the different material forms, mental forms, vital forms. This is how the process goes. So they are one, always one. And the thing that we see here is in the relation of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. That's why it is the highest relation that one can see. So in Ishvara and Shakti, what is the work of Shakti? Is his consciousness force. That's why the mother says, without him I exist not. Existence is Sat, Ishvara. Without me he is unmanifest, consciousness force. And together there is Ananda, the creation of Ananda. So that's why we see that one of the things which, and they are completely one. There is no asking, relating. There are some beautiful stories here. We know that someone asked here that who are the two advanced sadhaks who have perfected their surrender? And Hardhan Bakshi, long time back, so he says, there are only two, but don't tell it to anyone. So the person goes close, tell me the names. He says, there are only two who have perfected their surrender. The most advanced of all, Sri Aurobindo to the mother and the mother to Sri Aurobindo. And there's such interesting stories where a disciple asks something to Sri Aurobindo and Sri Aurobindo says, okay, you can do this, because Sri Aurobindo is like wide, impersonal, universal. And then he says, you know, but mother has said so. Oh, mother has said so? Then that's important. He would never cancel. Equally the mother would. If Sri Aurobindo has said something, that was the final word. This was the complete relation, and yet she would call him the Lord, which led to many people misunderstanding that, oh, Lord means Sri Aurobindo is the Guru. No, they are one and same, but this is the relation between the Shakti and the Ishvara. So Ishvara remains the Lord, and the Shakti, without Shakti, Shiva becomes Shav, and the existent becomes purely Purusha and Prakriti. That's why the two are one, they are always one together. But for the sake of manifestation, because Shakti is the executive power, the same relation Sri Aurobindo has kept here, that, well, it is through the Shakti that you have to go to the Lord, because she offtakes everything and offers it to the Lord. She has created everything, built everything. And there are some very, very beautiful stories, even in 1960s, if you read them, where, you see, Overmind Creation, 26, when the mother has prepared a whole Overmind Creation and takes it to Sri Aurobindo. And Sri Aurobindo says, no, this is not what we want. It will create a great religion. But we want that ultimate truth of the Ishvara and Shakti together. There should be no, even a little scope of error. So she dissolves it. Because Overmind Creation, as we have seen, is what comes closest. But she says no. He said no. And mother dissolves it within a few hours. And then they go toward the supramental creation. In 60s, the mother describes, she keeps on creating. And then she goes to Sri Aurobindo. And she says, Sri Aurobindo, every time she goes, Sri Aurobindo says, world is not yet ready. Every time. 3-4 times we will see, world is not yet ready. And she keeps on creating and creating and bringing it back to Sri Aurobindo. And he would say, world is not yet ready. So when we look at that relation, we will understand the relation of Ishvara and Shakti. Maya, according to the Advaita Vedanta, is creating illusory forms. They are not real realities, but they are temporary realities. Practically, we can connect with them because we are trapped in this illusion. But Shakti is not creating illusions. Shakti is creating the truths of the Ishvara. That's it. So each of us within us, there is a truth which is being created. The truth of the person, the truth of the personality. They derive from the Ishvara and Shakti. This is also the truth of nature. We have to embody the truth of the Shakti within this lower nature. That's what is transformation about. Because mother is everything. But we have to identify not as in lower nature, but in the higher super nature. So that's the very basis, that there is a truth. Just as Ishvara and Shakti are one, we have to join here the soul and nature in one togetherness. In the lower creation, the soul and nature relationship is not a very perfect relation. Either nature is dancing and the Purusha is sitting like this, submerged, sleeping, but he has no choice. He has to just bear with it. But there is a tacit sanction, okay? Or he is just watching the dance and saying, very good, very nice. Or he is a kind of indifferent person sanctioning. Okay, I want to dance this dance. Okay, fine. There is no real meaning, no real sense. In Purusha or Prakriti of the Sankhya, there is no real meaning and purpose in the play. Same thing in Advaita Vedanta. There is no real meaning and real purpose. Maya has created for what reason? We don't know. Where did she come from? We don't know. But she has created all these forms, which are ultimately illusory, but yet, okay, when we are dealing with them, we can, you know, satisfy our urge for worship, for prayer. We can have a transactional relationship. Within illusion it operates. It's very simple that, you know, in a role playing, you are playing a role. So in the role, there is a manager who is managing a big company, and there is a person who is working as a servant there. In all old movies, you will see that villain is the best dressed fellow. And the hero is generally, you know, one of those poor fellows who is going there and he is asking, and the villain says something, or the company manager. But is it real? It's not real. It's just transactional. It's a role. This role has no real purpose except entertainment. So here Sri Aurobindo says, her play is real. A mystery she fulfills. Don't take it that this is just a role playing going on without any purpose. And what is the purpose? Ultimately, through all this, the truth of Ishvara and Shakti has to be revealed inside and recreated here. That's how we'll have diversity and multiplicity on the basis of oneness. So because that is the original plan. And here comes the logic, spiritual logic, which that's how I saw it, that when, how does creation begin? It begins with ekoham bahushyam. The one wants to become many. So what kind of many? Playing an illusory game, why would he do it? So one wants to become many means each of the many must become same as the Ishwara and Shakti, but from a certain angle. That's what many would mean. Otherwise, what is the point of becoming many? So this is how the idea of Ishwara and Shakti, and it means, implies that God is not just, we can use the word God now, he is not just an impersonal universal state of consciousness. And relation with God is not just a concession granted to a human being. Nor is he just a kind of pure intelligence. Nor is he just a kind of formless who has nothing to do with anything. He is real. He is a person and a personality. And all his person, all this person and personality seeks to recreate in his world multiple persons and personalities. Each of them will replicate that original truth. So this is there in our Puranas. As I said, Sri Krishna comes very close to him. For example, in the story of Gop and Gopi dancing in Vrindavan. So what happens? Each Gopi realizes or experiences Krishna with her. So all of them, but with each one, he is dancing in a unique way. It's not like with somebody is having a, you know, salsa, somebody having, but there is a total rhythm in all that. They are dancing together. When each of them, there is not one, but there are multiple Krishnas, and each of them is dancing with Krishna, keeping rhythm with him. So these are the hints which have been there, that that's how creation will become, one will become many. And this many will not be sameness, not uniform many, but diverse many, and that will create the dance worthwhile. It's like an orchestra where there are 300 people and each is has a conductor, and the conductor is conducting a kind of music instrument, but total thing becomes a harmony. We can't say that I'll have 300 players but all of them will play harmonium. So after some time that harmonium will become very disharmonious, very boring. So this is the original plan. And now we come to what Sri Aurobindo has to say about it. He says, in its supreme status, page 365, the spirit is the supreme conscious being, Purushottama. So Purusha of the Sankhya also realizes its ultimate. Supreme conscious being. This is not Sankhya. Is pure intelligence. He says, where does it come from? From the supreme conscious being. Purushottama. And the consciousness force is his supreme nature, para prakriti. So prakriti of the Sankhya comes from the para prakriti. So that's how he takes us there. Its whole origin is there. In each status of the gradations of nature, the spirit takes a poise of its being proper to their gradation. In mind nature, it becomes the mental being. In life nature, the vital being. In nature of matter, it becomes the physical being. Now, that's a very wonderful story, but we'll leave that aside for a moment. But it is evident that whatever the posture taken or relation formed in any individual nodus of Purush Prakriti, the being is in a fundamental cosmic relation, lord or ruler of its nature. For even when it allows nature to have its own way with it, its consent is necessary to support her working. So this is where there is a hint in the Sankhya of Anumanta, one who sanctions the work. Now the difference is that in the ordinary play of Purusha and Prakriti, the sanction is largely taken for granted. Why? Because the Purusha is asleep. It's not developed into a fully conscious being. So it's like when a person who is let's say the CEO of a company or somebody, he becomes demented. Let's take for example. There have been instances like that. Now who runs the game? He is only namesake. So others go and he signs indifferently. Sanction is there. He is supposed to sign. Shubhendu uses the word. Signing. Signing indifferently to the ministers. Ministers come and take it and the person is signing. Because he cannot, he's not, that's the Purusha of the Sankhya who gives the Anumanta. His sanction is there. But why has he sanctioned this play? Well, he is like that he is just sanctioning the play. How does he sanction? By lending its intelligence to everything. The sun is lending its power to everything. What you do is your problem. You may use that light or that energy to blow up cities. You may use that energy to light up a whole city. Now that's where comes the law of karma through which it is explained. That well, God is the source of all qualities, all power. Man suddenly comes in the picture. And man has to only use or misuse. Based on use or misuse, he ascends ultimately to merge with the ineffable. So, see, neat explanation. But it leaves a big gap. Why creation at all? So, here he says that at least Sankhya admits that there is the Anumanta. Here, the Supreme Person, the being in its transcendental and cosmic consciousness and force, come to the front. Omnipotent, omniscient, the controller of all energies, the conscious in all that is conscient or inconscient. He remains the Ishvara, the inhabitant of all souls and minds and hearts and bodies, the ruler or overruler of all works, the enjoyer of all delight, the creator who has built all things in his own being, the all person of whom all beings are personalities, the power from whom are all powers, the self, the spirit in all, by his being, the father of all that is, in his consciousness force, the divine mother, the friend of all creatures, the all blissful and all beautiful, of whom beauty and joy are the revelation, the all beloved and all lover. So he is saying that at the cosmic level, this is not the Ishvara of the Saguna. He will clarify that. But this is in his transcendental. That's why he is clarifying that there is a kind of yoga, Vedantic yoga, which will admit that yes, he is all this. But again, he has a concession to enter into the formless reality. So he say he will himself, in with his beautiful words, let us read. In a certain sense, so seen and understood, this becomes the most comprehensive of the aspects of the reality, since here all are united in a single formulation. For the Ishvara is supracosmic, he is the Lord and ruler, he governs the cosmos, so he has to be beyond cosmos, as well as intracosmic. He is governing every creature, so he is also within the heart of every creature. He is in every god and goddesses, so he is also cosmic. He is that which exceeds and inhabits and supports all individuality. He is the supreme and universal Brahman, the absolute, the supreme self, the supreme Purusha. But very clearly, this is not the personal god of popular religions. What is the difference? Personal god of popular religions is a being limited by his qualities. So what is the personal god? Supposing a god embodies compassion. But where is strength and force? That's how Sri Aurobindo says how Islam and Christianity, they complement it. Because Christ embodied love and compassion. So as a corrective, Islam comes where God is only force. And it did that. It was required to destroy the world. So we see old world order. So like a Rudra energy, it went forth. So it came to counterbalance that God is not just love and compassion, but God is also force. But then what both missed is that above all he is delight. So this is where we see that one aspect or the other aspect of that, he is not talking of that God. Okay, is he talking of Sagun? He further clarifies us. But very clearly, this is not the personal God of popular religions, a being limited by his qualities, individual and separate from all others. Equally, we can say he is not the gods as we know. You know, the Shiva has one aspect. Then we have Brahma who has another aspect. Vishnu has another aspect. So he is not talking of that. For all such personal gods are only limited representations or names and divine personalities of the one Ishvara. So all of them find their origin in the Ishvara. So it's not an arbitrarily Maya is just picking out some qualities and giving it form and shape. There is the truth. And in the Ishvara they are all united. That's why Mother says those who want to continue to worship the gods, they may do so. But they must know that it has nothing to do with the supramental realization. Why? Because you are bringing, actually Mother is upgrading them. Their own origin is in the Ishvara where all of them are fused. This is what we see in the Vishwaroop, where we see all the Adityas, you know, all the Trinity, everybody is in the Sri Krishna's Vishwaroop. So that is the sense that each of them, we can see them as a limited God or we can see them as aspect of the Ishvara. So they are all limited representations or names and divine personalities of the one Ishvara. Neither is this the Sagun Brahma, very clearly, so that you know we don't mistake. Neither is this the Sagun Brahman, active and possessed of qualities, for that is only one side of the being of the Ishvara. So because Sagun Brahman is not complete, its Nirgun is other aspect. But in the Ishvara, Sagun and Nirgun are fused together. They are always one. And some of the beautiful places it is described, Ramcharitmanas, by kind of intuition, bhakti can open a psychic door and can intuitively people can sense a very profound truth. So this is the description of, you know, Rama and Lakshman are walking and in between Sita is walking. And Tulsidas says like that. He says, Brahma Jeev Bich Maya Jaise. She is the creatrix. Here is the Jeeva. And here is the Brahman, and they are always together. And there is a whole way of interpreting the Ramayana as, you know, there is a Ramayana known as Adhut Ramayana, which is an Adhyatma Ramayana. Where Sita says, you think that I am the one whom Ravan could take? It's all my game. I am the one who became all this. Why? Out of love. Because to bring back Ravan. Now that whole perspective changes. And it's a very beautiful, beautiful understanding of Ramayana from that perspective. Because always the divine Shakti is in the forefront. She decides. And the divine soul, the divine being sanctions in it ultimately. What does she decide? She knows the heart of the existence, that the divine being. So she decides based on that. So it's not the Sagun Brahma. The Nirgun, immobile and without qualities, is another aspect of his existence. Ishvara is Brahman, the reality, self, spirit, revealed as possessor, enjoyer of his own self-existence, creator of the universe and one with it. Pantheos, that means many personalities, and yet superior to it, the eternal, the infinite, the ineffable, the divine transcendence. And this is the, it's beautifully described in the Gita. And the same truth, because we see that Sri Krishna had revealed many truths to Sri Aurobindo, and that's why he says, we are carrying the work of Krishna forward. Sri Krishna had revealed these truths. And then he is not basing it on theory or, you know, scriptural understanding. Is basing it on direct experience. He had the experience of the impersonal Brahman reality much before. Then he had the experience of the Sagun Brahman, all the gods who would come and speak to him. And then he had the experience of the Supreme Being. Mother also had the same experience in her own way. She describes her experience with the Supreme twice. So, the sharp opposition made between personality and impersonality by our mental way of thinking is a creation of the mind based on the appearance of the material world. For here, in terrestrial existence, the inconscient from which everything takes its origin appears as something entirely impersonal. Nature, the inconscient energy, is entirely impersonal. In her manifest existence, essence and dealings, all forces wear this mask of impersonality. All qualities and powers, love and delight and consciousness itself, have this aspect. Personality makes its apparition as a creation of consciousness in an impersonal world, which is what we see. It is like suddenly out of the mud somebody emerges, like some of these movies, no? The hero emerges out of water, or in some muddy water he emerges, and now suddenly. But this is the impersonal reality. So personality is regarded as a creation. It doesn't have an ultimate reality. Nature has created the sense of personality. In Buddhism they describe it as onion peels. That you, if you peel one layer after another, you will, what do you find at the core? Nothing. So there is no ultimate truth of personality. It is a creation. Truth is always impersonal, whether you look at this end or the other end. Sri Aurobindo says, no sir. In the divine being, the impersonal and the personal are both joined together. The nirgun and sagun. They are both together. And that's why he says that the mother can, someone asked him that, you know, whether mother can give him the experience of nirgun brahma. She says, of course, and she can give you more. You want more? This is the story of this very chapter being read by Amrita and few others, and the mother is passing by and she asks him, what are you doing? He says, mother, we are reading the Life Divine. Oh, what are you reading? Brahmana, Purusha, Ishvara. Then he says, mother, but we understand nothing. We are reading it, but we don't understand anything. So mother puts a little tap, all the three. And then she says, then she goes away after tapping them, you know, like playfully. We understand nothing. So she gives a tap and goes. And when she comes back, and they have gone into Brahman consciousness. Impersonal Brahman. When she comes back, they are all samadhi. She brings them back. She says, you know, my child, I can give you this realization like this. But we are not here for that. We are here for something greater. So that is where, because he is beyond the impersonal and the personal in a supra-personal truth. But because of our ignorant vision, that's how we see nirgun and sagun and all that. But what we call, okay, so therefore, what do people come out with? To lose personality is necessary if we are to gain universality. Still more necessary if we are to rise into the transcendence. So if you want to really, you have to get rid of personality. This is the logic, that all personality is a limitation and hence a hindrance to the, you know, the world, the cosmic consciousness realization. But very interestingly, Sri Krishna establishes there is something called as world personality. And the mother says that in the process of realization towards the supramental transformation, individuals who are evolving, they will experience a world personality. It's very amazing. Which we'll come to at the appropriate time. But there's a joke about it. When I first time went abroad, so I noticed, you know, you want to see all the ticket, what is written in the ticket. All this is like everything you want to read, it's new. So somewhere it was written. World traveler. Now, I didn't know why they have written. I thought, oh, how they have already predicted. It was like a joke. But they write on every ticket world traveler because that's what it means. You are traveling. I am going from here to Kenya. I said, arre wah, this is great. They have given me a very special status of a world traveler. So, this is how. But actually, the individual personality will develop into something called as a cosmic personality. So there is not just cosmic consciousness, but a cosmic being, cosmic personality. Still further, one with the transcendent being and the transcendent personality. That is the original game. But ordinarily we think we have to lose the personality to rise into the universal and the transcendence. But what we thus call personality is only a formation of superficial consciousness. So we see only a set of attributes, certain behaviors, a physical body, and we call it personality. But this is not the truth of personality. And the example that Sri Aurobindo gives ultimately, that look, when divine comes as an avatar, he deals with different people in different ways. He doesn't deal in a uniform way. This is the experience of the world personality and the transcendent personality. Where you know the truth of each one, the right law of being, and you act according to that. You don't do a uniform. So those who are expecting that with everybody, mother will deal the same way. No, this is a mistake. She will deal with each one according to the right law of truth, which is already there in the supermind. So this idea of universality means everybody should get the same thing, everybody must do the same thing. No, it's not like that. To some she will, maybe to one person she may give a big house. To another person she may give a very small room. To one person you will find that he has all kinds of experiences just coming his way. To somebody else you may find that he is struggling, trying, all kinds of things. Because hers is not the standard, the way we understand personality with fixed characters. Sri Aurobindo describes this about Gnostic beings, that they will have a personality which will be like described in the Gita as an impersonal personality. And these are the words which Purani ji wrote about Sri Aurobindo when he met him. He said, I was reminded of the words of the Gita where he describes it as impersonal personality. He would be impersonal. Always there is an impersonality about Sri Aurobindo. And then there is a personal which is so different. With each one it is different. With Champaklalji, did you find the nails? Somebody else is just putting a hand on the shoulder. Someone else giving a little tap. Somebody else is saying one thing. And it's not based on anything arbitrary, but based on exactly how the divine governs the world. So these are hints we find in him. He did not let anybody lose their personality. See, this is another beautiful thing we find in the ashram. Many people don't notice it. Take the different people, sadhaks, preeminent, those who have shown us the way, who have gone ahead of us, gone before us. Whether you take Nalnida, Amrita, Pavitrada, Champaklalji, Nirodha, many others who came subsequently, Dhyuman Bhai, all of them, you can't fit them into one standard format. Each in their own. Because divine, what does he do? Mother says, true surrender aggrandizes your personality. These are her words. What it will remove is the false things. Ambition and all that. Pranabdha, all of them. Amal Kiran, unique. You can't compare the two. Very different. Why? Because each one will represent something of that transcendent Godhead. And they are all still in the making. We can imagine what it will be. It's not like standard format. Everybody is sitting in meditation and coming up with quiet. All the monks are very quiet. All of them are hardly speaking. No. Because that somebody is manifesting the smile of the Lord. Somebody is manifesting the strength of the Lord. And accordingly, the nature is also transforming itself. So this is the whole idea of manifestation. Okay. So this sharp distinction, okay, finally. And then he gives a very beautiful logic. He says, when you say the divine is existence, divine is consciousness, divine is ananda, now he gives a very interesting logic. What is existent without an existent? What is consciousness without a conscient being? Now let's read. So beautiful it is. But what we thus call personality is only a formation of superficial consciousness. Behind it is the person who takes on various personalities, but is himself one real eternal. And the more we grow into this yoga, we begin to realize that each one in this sense is a unique integer of the one with a capital O. And then you begin to understand there is no difference, there is differentiation, but there is no separation. It's not like me versus you. It's not in him or her, the divine, the same divine is manifesting in one way, taking along a certain line. In another one, the same divine is manifesting in another way, along a certain line, and that opens doors to true universality. Not a universality which blurs the distinction, but a universality which makes these distinctions demarcations but not separations. That is the basic difference. So if we look at things from a larger point of view, we might say this: what is impersonal is only a power of the person. See, that's why he's saying the transcendent person holds within himself both. Is the capacity to just absorb all things into oneself. And you know, there are moments, no, when we are so detached simply because we don't want to connect with anybody, relate with anyone. And people may think that what has happened, is everything right? But you have entered into your impersonal state. So what is impersonal? See, is what is impersonal is only a power of the person, the capacity to completely disengage from everything. Existence itself has no meaning without an existent. Where is existence coming from? From the one existent. Consciousness has no standing place if there is none who is conscious. Delight is useless and invalid without an enjoyer. Love can have no foundation or fulfillment if there is no lover. There is divine love, but there is no lover. Look how strange it you would feel. Divine love is there, but there is no lover. Compassion is there, but there is no compassionate one. Strength is there, but there is no the strong one who can stand by your side. So that's what he is trying to show, the absurdity. There is delight, but there is none who is enjoying this delight. And from there, Shobindo gives a very beautiful thing. We have the Trinity in Indian thought. Shobindo changes it into quaternary. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Krishna. Adds Krishna. So he gives a very interesting understanding of these four. He says, Brahma is infinite existence. What we experience is as overmind gods, but he takes them to their ultimate origin. Infinite existence. So that divine personality is infinite. Vishnu is infinite consciousness. Shiva is infinite force. And Krishna is infinite delight. And in the one, they are all fused together. That's the description we find in Savitri when she is face to face with the Supreme. Love can have no foundation or fulfillment if there is no lover. All power must be otios if there is not an almighty. For what we mean by person is conscious being. It, not the conscious, see, the Purusha of the Sankhya is not a conscious being. It is Shuddha intelligence which goes and stirs Prakriti, and Prakriti becomes conscious. That's how it is. Even if this emerges here as a term or product of the inconscient, it is not that in reality, for it is the inconscient itself that is a term of the secret consciousness. So now he describes, and the last sentence we'll read with this. Now he describes, how come we see personality coming out of inconscient? See, only human beings have something called as personality. Animals don't have a personality. They may have an attitude which they have picked up from human beings. Look at a lion, attitude. I don't care about you. So, but they don't have a personality. So we say personality is a creation of nature. But Sri Aurobindo gives a logic. He says, because the Supreme Personality is hidden in the inconscient, he has become the inconscient. So he has to emerge at a point of time. How beautiful this is. So it's not enough that mind emerges in creation, personalities are emerging. That's what incidentally is having in this generation, what is called a generation alpha. People don't understand. This is a generation where personalities are being formed. So you'll see a lot of stress on individuality. Unfortunately, they are called the millennium children as me and mine. This is a necessary part. They will revolt against society. You cannot have individuality formed if you are continuing to follow social conventions. So they are revolting because nature's plan is to create individualities. Once you have individualities, that means now different vanilla, butterscotch, all these are formed inside a nice khacha. Then the next step will be going beyond this ego-individuality into the divine. But you cannot skip this stage. If one is still, mother goes on to say, if you still are in that stage of social norms, believing in all this, you are not ready for the yoga. These are her words. One is not yet ready for the spiritual life. So we see nature is hastening because Sri Aurobindo and the mother have come. So nature is saying, oh my God, I have to create individualities. Personality. So now we see that this is task. Go back 100 years. Most people are on standard format. But now we will see these individualities. So anyway, so he says something very beautiful here. We'll see many secrets coming like that. Okay. And so he describes, but in truth, there is no opposition between personality and impersonal. An eternal, infinite self-existence is the supreme reality, but the supreme, transcendent, eternal being, self and spirit, an infinite person, we may say, because his being is the essence and source of all personality. So we think personality means limiting. But infinite personality need not limit. This is the mind's problem. Because we understand personality as a limitation. But he is infinite personality because he becomes all personalities. Is the reality and meaning of self-existence, so too the cosmic self, spirit, being, person, is the reality and meaning of cosmic existence, the same self, spirit, being or person manifesting its multiplicity is the reality and meaning of individual existence. So he has given us a secret. Each individual is nothing else but he has to manifest the reality of the one person. But in each one in his own way, that's how ekoham bahushyam, that's how the multiplicity, that's how the oneness and unity in diversity, which is the original plan, and now it has entered its accelerated phase. Now we'll read that ultimate question. The ultimate question is, okay, divine is personality, so he is governing the world. What way he is governing the world? How is he ruling the world? What is his mechanism? Because we want to understand. We will come to that after 5-7 minutes break.